Welcome to Vice Casting Couch Podcast, Season 1, Episode 31. I am Ryan, and of course joining me is John. What do you have for us today, John?
Oh, well, I got a couple things, actually, but real quick, how long is Season 1 going to last, you know?
Till it doesn't.
Oh.
We'll just...
It's like Rick and Morty. They're like 100 episodes of Ryan and John. Ryan and John forever.
Season 1 forever, John. I don't know, maybe we'll do like doesn't Joe Rogan do like he just keeps on adding on? It's like episode 600 or whatever.
Well, I don't think he has seasons though. That's why I'm confused. I think he just has numbers. Like,
oh well, I mean, I feel like we're still in our first season, you know.
Well, so, anyway, as y'all know, CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, just recently happened. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in there, but as me and Ryan like PCs and everything, I was mainly going to talk about the AMD keynote and some of the stuff they unveiled. A lot of stuff from AMD came out. Before CES, they actually released their Ryzen 7000 CPUs, which are looking really good. It's on the Zen 4 architecture, has a lot of speed enhancements, and they're actually looking pretty good, giving Intel a run for their money.
Mm-hmm.
But at the keynote, one of the things they announced was some of the Ryzen 7000 mobile CPUs, laptops with RDNA 3 graphics, and what I find the most interesting, and we're going to wait until these actually get in the hands of reviewers, is the Zen 4, the Ryzen 7000 X3D CPUs. So if you aren't aware, X3D is a way of doing this 3D cache on the processor, and it gives these processors a huge amount of cache. Like, I think it's like 144 megabytes, which when you look at a standard processor is like nothing.
Yeah.
And which is really interesting, because when they originally announced the Ryzen 7000 series processors, they were doing really good against Intel. But AMD was also their own competition. So they had, what is it, 5800X3D? Because of that 3D V-cache, a lot of like games and applications will utilize that. So instead of having to reach all the way back to RAM to get data, they can get it from the much faster cache that's on the CPU. I'm really excited for that.
They just built up, right, with the 3D cache?
Yeah.
They just layered it.
It's kind of like HBM memory, but obviously a little different. So for instance, their top of the line, the Ryzen 9 7950X3D, you know, has a boost clock of 5.7 gigahertz, base of 4.2, 16 cores, 32 threads, has 144 megabytes of cache like total, and is a 120 watt TDP. So it looks really interesting. If I do upgrade my PC, I'd probably go that route. I still want to wait on the benchmarks though, just to make sure that, you know how like all these marketing, you got to take it with a grain of salt until the actual benchmark comes out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, just with the mobile CPUs as well, I'm maybe not for laptops, but I am interested to see what these small computer companies like Minisform do, and they implement them, because with that better RDNA 3 graphics like baked in, it should be really nice for like a very compact like gaming machine, or even like if you're in an emulation running like Bottlesera or something like that, you know, I could see it being pretty beneficial.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I mean, I think we're both in the market to upgrade computers, and
well, I'm still rocking the old 1700X, like the Zen 1.
Same.
You know?
Yep.
And yeah, it's been good. I still run everything. It's just, you know, every now and then you're like, I just want that little extra, that little bit more, you know.
I mean, yeah, especially since everything has kind of grown by leaps and bounds, the GPUs and CPUs and all that. I mean, there's no reason not to upgrade. But I mean, yeah, I still have the 1700X and a 580, I think. And so far, I mean,
the 580.
Yeah. I mean, it's handled everything so far. Like I even have like MW2 or whatever, and it runs fine. But
new one?
Yeah, the new one.
Oh, okay.
Well, and the old one. Yeah, it would just be nice.
IW4X,
you know? Yeah. But yeah, it would be nice just to have that extra kind of oomph.
One of the things I didn't mention before is that they also announced some of their non-X models, which are supposed to be more energy efficient. Hmm. So like instead of that 120 watt TDP we were talking about, it's now a 65 watt TDP. So it's actually looking pretty good with the efficiency and everything as well. So depending on which route you want to go, some people are like, give me all the power. Let me run my PC on a separate breaker, you know. other people are like, nah, man, I'm just trying to get good stuff without blowing up my house kind of thing.
Yeah, that is probably smart as well. Because, I mean, if you're not just targeting the gaming community, if you're someone that just wants a decent computer to run for, you know, on the cheap, then that would definitely be the route to go. Because, I mean, if you don't need the power, then why pay for it? So the story that I have is a fake app known as Shaggle. So originally, Shaggle was a website it's a dating website, basically, like a hookup website, whatever, like Tinder, however you want to word it. But there was a threat actor known as APT-C41 is their designation, also known as Strong Pity. And they made a clone website of the Shaggle website. And then it has a download button on there. And when you download that, it's just a straight up Trojan, but it's based off of the Telegram app. Most people know the Telegram app as being a secure messaging platform, but they made a backdoor into it. So once you download it, it basically has full control over your phone. It even pops up and asks you for permission to have full control, which obviously anytime an app asks for that should be a big red flag. But yeah, you know, no matter how horny you are, maybe take a step back and make sure you're not bricking your phone. But they did say in the article that the app that is on the Play Store and on the Apple Store is not infected. That is the legitimate one. But if you're going off of the website and downloading an APK, that may be the infected app. So just be careful because the website does look exactly the same.
It's very interesting, man. So you're saying it's a fake version of Telegram? Is that what I'm hearing?
It's based off of the Telegram code, yes. It's a Trojanized version of Telegram.
But it's being
distributed as a dating app.
Oh.
So basically the download, they just took the Telegram like base app and then Trojanized it and then loaded that onto a clone website. So when you click on it, it just downloads an APK that looks like the Shaggle app, but it's actually just the Telegram app that's been manipulated.
Well, if people just bought waifu pillows, we wouldn't have this
problem. Oh, no. Does it have the hole pre-cut into it, or do you have to make that yourself?
Hey, we ain't going to talk about that. We don't want to get demonetized.
Yeah, not that we're monetized anyway, especially with the new YouTube policy updates.
Well, speaking of Google.
Definitely without being monetized.
Chrome, if you haven't known, has been trying to go to this Manifest V3. And the main idea behind it is to favor a more limited, creating more restrictions on extensions and what they can do, mainly to prevent ad blockers, right? Good news has come out that this Manifest V3 has been delayed again, and they don't even have a timeline, and they said it won't be ready. The new timeline won't even be ready until March. If you guys are still using Chrome, I guess that's some good news for y'all, but just know that it is on the horizon that your ad blocker and everything might not work in the future if Google gets their way.
I mean, it sounds like people should move away from Chrome.
And if you listen to me, I'm going to tout Firefox a lot. I know Mozilla is not the best company out there, but it's still better than what Google has. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate as there is really this like a duopoly almost in browsers and not even like Chrome obviously has the highest market share
by far.
But then you have Firefox still kind of holding on a little bit. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. And then obviously you have all the weird browsers out there that a lot of them are just Chrome knockoffs. They just take the Chromium browser and add their own flair to it, you know, like Brave and a few Opera and a few other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, Edge even uses Chromium, if I remember correctly.
I believe so, yeah. I mean, to be honest, I know a lot of people like Chrome just for the usability and being able to like connect your accounts and stuff like that. But man, if you just performance wise, I mean, there are several videos on YouTube that have like the Chrome tab challenge or whatever, and they try to see how many tabs they can open up before their computer fries it or shuts down. I mean, Chrome uses a lot of resources, and there are for sure more secure and more privacy-centric browsers out there that just perform a lot better as far as resources go. So I would definitely suggest maybe looking into something else.
Well, I have heard that Chrome is coming out with some new memory saver feature to help reduce its RAM intensiveness. Because I don't know if you guys ever opened like 8 Chrome tabs. You're going to have like 90% of your RAM taken up. It's crazy. Yep. And not that Firefox is a whole lot better. You know, I'm the tab king when it comes to this. But
this is true.
it is. I think it is a little ridiculous with how much RAM these web browsers are taking up on people's computer.
I agree. I wish more companies would do like a light version of them. I know YouTube used to have YouTube Feather, which was like a light version of their site, where a lot of the like niceties and quality of life stuff wouldn't load. So if you're on a, you know, a slower internet or something like that, you can still stream videos at pretty high quality without the bells and whistles on the website. Personally, I wish more companies would kind of look into that, because I mean, not everyone has super fast internet, and it would definitely be nice to still have the core service without, if you're willing to sacrifice some of the other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think a lot of it just comes with modern websites using so much CSS and all that different technology behind it to one, make them look good and sexy and everything, but it also just takes up a lot of data.
Or 50,000 Java scripts running once you load a website.
you could block a lot of it. There are a lot of extensions out there that'll help strip it down and everything.
That is true, but some of them are built around those like aspects, and then the website just breaks.
Yeah. Another interesting thing I figure I'd mention is companies like Framework and Noctua and a couple other brands, they are actually having official 3D model files on this website called Printables. And if you're into 3D printing and whatnot, this is kind of interesting. I was briefly looking at the website, and you can see stuff like Noctua and Cooler Master and Raspberry Pi. They actually have like some official models that they have and recommend. So I think this will be kind of interesting. Like, for instance, on the Noctua one, they have an adapter to convert like a 120 millimeter fan to fit in a 140 millimeter fan hole. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
You know, just stuff like that. I thought it was very interesting, you know, might lead to some interesting projects down the line. I haven't seen any other companies do something like this before. So it's kind of nice to see that. It's kind of a breath of fresh air, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So you're saying in the future we're going to be printing our own computer parts?
Well, it is highly possible. You know, it really depends, one, if you have a 3D printer, and because I'm not going to say that they're the best things in sliced bread, but they do take some calibration and some trial and error in the beginning just to get them right.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are people who have printed, like, computer cases and fan adapters and stuff like that. There's actually a YouTube channel. He designs like these weird eccentric fans and just tests them. He's like, oh, yeah, we're getting this much airflow and blah, blah, blah. So
I think that's a really good idea. And I mean, if someone comes up with a really good, version of a product or something like that, I mean, the company can always buy it off of them or buy the rights to it or whatever. I think that's free labor, I think.
Yeah. Unpaid labor. I gotta love it.
Yeah.
You gotta own the means of production.
whoa, all right. we're not backing any manifestos here.
Wait. It was just a joke.
might have to cut this out here.
Oh yeah, cut that out.
Susan, please don't ban us.
Oh, you know the lady at YouTube?
What, Susan Wojcicki?
Who's that?
The CEO of YouTube.
Oh, well, it shows you how much I keep in the
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, that's the current CEO of YouTube. and she has a lot of bullshit policies. But
if you guys have ever heard of Pine64, they're actually this really interesting company that makes a lot of free and open source hardware as much as possible and tries to make it support Linux. And usually it's stuff that, like, yeah, we know Linux can run on the desktop and your laptop. But a lot of their devices include stuff like smartwatches, and they're even dabbling in the phone and tablets area. Mm. You know, there's I think they actually have like a soldering iron. It's called like the Pinesel, kind of like a pencil. You know, it's a play on words. But
nice.
But they just announced that their PineTab 2 will be coming out recently. And one of the problems with the PineTab, the original PineTab, is one, it had a little less lower specs, but two, it got hit really hard with the supply chain problems. So They said the Pinetab 2 should be released, I think, the end of February. But it'll also be nice because it'll include more RAM and it has a more easily open chassis. So they support a lot of the user upgradability and serviceability of their products. So I'm kind of interested on the Pinetab 2. And if you guys are too, let me know. Maybe I'll pick one up and we can do a review on the channel.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely interested in that. Because, yeah, their phones look really promising.
Yeah, the phones are pretty good. The main problem now is just because they are trying to go that open source, free and open source route, is getting drivers to work properly. And the main thing now is just getting the software to be nice. So, like, I have a PinePhone, the original one. It is neat to play with, but it's a long way from being a daily driver. It does have a lot of neat abilities, like there are the dip switches, at least on the original PinePhone, to, like, it's a hardware switch to actually disconnect, like, your microphone and your cellular modem and stuff like that. So, like, say if you're really paranoid, when you're done using your phone, just flip those switches and it cuts everything. Like, yeah, the screen stuff will still work, but it won't have access to your microphones or your GPS or LTE, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I know with the latest Android update, I know there's a software, kind of like a software version of dip switches. They do allow you to block access to any microphone and camera, which I thought was pretty interesting. I don't know how well it works. I haven't seen anyone test it yet to see exactly if it actually does block everything. But I thought that was pretty interesting that even, even like Samsung or something like that is coming out with kind of like a software version of dip switches.
Well, just goes to show, you know, if people are installing weird apps from Shaggle or whatever, and instead of having full access to your device, because that's one that when you bring that up, I'm a little suspicious of the software, because software can always lie to you, right?
Yeah.
Say if a malware is pretty advanced, it can make it look like you flipped the switch off, but in reality, did it? So I kind of am more partial to the hardware switches that actually disconnect the circuit. I really do think Pine 64 is helping pave the way for one more competition in the market. It would be nice to see something that's actually usable alternative to, say, Android and iOS. Mm-hmm. But also have that free and open source mentality, you know, like if, once they get the software, and it's not just Pine64, there's a lot of people working on this, but once they get the Linux phone software down, I think it could open a lot of possibilities. There is another one. It's made by, what is it, the Librem 5.
Okay.
They're a company that makes like laptops, but they also made a Linux phone as well. It's just, and that's made by Purism. So if you ever heard of like Pure OS and their laptops, they're interesting. It's just the Librem 5. I've heard either really expensive or another thing is just the software isn't there yet. Like, yeah, your basic apps like calculator might work, but
yeah,
people want other apps as well. And the Pine phone was kind of interesting. There was actually an Android port that the community was developing. Hmm. And honestly, I think if you had open source hardware, but Android running on it, it might not be a bad compromise, or at least a more pure version of Android, like AOSP, the Android Open Source Project.
Yeah.
That might be interesting. Obviously, stock Android has a lot of fingers from Google messing with stuff. there are a couple other OSs, you know, seeing we are kind of talking about smartphones and the history they've had. You know, there was a period in time where Ubuntu was trying to make the Ubuntu phone. But obviously that didn't really get a whole lot of traction, didn't really go anywhere. It kind of died. I don't even think they actually released it, if I remember correctly. And then another operating system is Sailfish OS. And I think Nokia has a little bit to do with that, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So, you know, there is some different things out there. It's just mainly getting that traction and getting, you know, app developers on board is, I think, what's really going to turn the tide for a lot of stuff. And who knows, maybe Valve will get in the game. I know, or I've even heard of Elon talking about a Tesla phone. So,
oh no, I don't know if I'd trust that.
Hey, if it has Starlink, I'd be very interested. You know,
yeah.
I know we talked before. T-Mobile made a partnership with Starlink, so
yeah, in
the potential next 5 years, you might have reception wherever you're at.
I don't know. I think Starlink is very much in its early stages of being anything useful apart from rural applications or very niche applications. From what I've seen,
I know a lot of RVers and like you said, rural people really like their Starlink.
Yeah, if you're in the rural areas and stuff like that, and you have no other option unless you're gonna pay some company $10,000 to like run fiber to your house, then it's a very viable solution. That's great, but
Beats HughesNet.
What's that?
HughesNet. They're one of the satellite internet providers that they're faster than them, and they're I think comparable in price as well.
Well, not startup price, but yeah.
Yeah, but see,
it's $600.
Yeah, well,
to start up Starlink.
I was on their website the other day, and they have a high performance model supposedly, and that one costs like $2,500.
Oh my word!
I was looking on Reddit, and they're like, it's not worth it.
Again, for real, again, if you have no other options and you're willing to pay for it, I think it's a great application. It's a great option that you have. At least you can have something. You always have the option to pay for that. But I just think it's in its very, very early stages. I mean, as far as I can tell, the speeds are not incredible. They're definitely not as fast as what was promised.
Getting 100 meg. That's better than a lot of people with dial-up speeds.
Yeah, but that's nowhere near what was promised when they first launched. That's like a quarter of what they promised. So I just think it's a very niche application right now. I would love to see it get cheaper and more integrated in the future. So that, because more options is always better, more competition, the better. But right now, I don't see it as a very good option unless you're really hard up.
I think a lot
of
it will help improve once they build their network out more. Like, I know the end goal is to have like something like 60,000 satellites or something like that. And
which
they
was
only have
blocked.
Like maybe five or. They only have 5,000 satellites or something like that.
Yeah,
it's a long ways from their original goal.
Correct.
So I think it'll improve. It'd be very interested to see. At least it is an option. I have heard in some areas like cities, the network does get congested just because there is limited satellite footprint.
Yes.
But
yeah.
I know a lot of RVers. They're like, yeah, we have it on our roof, and we can just drive down the road, and we still have internet and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And again, if you're in that sort of situation, like an RV, or you're out in the country somewhere, 5 miles from the nearest person, it's a great option. I'm very glad that there is at least an option for people to be connected. Because everything runs on the internet nowadays. And if you don't have that, it can be extremely crippling. But yeah, I think it's in its very, very early stages for any sort of major useful application.
One last article I figure I'd talk about, since we kind of went on a tangent about smartphones, internet, and everything.
Yeah.
Is this one I thought is kind of interesting, and I heard there's some lawsuits involved actually, but the San Francisco, they have recently allowed police to use robots to remotely kill suspects. And there's talks of using like these old bomb disposal robots and equipping them with firearms. So part of me gets it, especially if it's like a dangerous situation. You could just drive something in there and not have to worry about getting an officer in harm's way.
Yeah,
but I feel like it could cause problems down the road, so we'll see how this goes. I figure I'd mention it definitely is interesting.
That is that's an interesting concept. Because if it's connected to any sort of network, then it can also be compromised.
Yeah, they didn't go a whole lot into the technical details. And I know a lot of people are kind of against this idea. Like the San Francisco Public Defenders, they sent in a letter to the Board of Supervisors saying that the ability to kill a community member remotely is dehumanizing and militaristic. And that the streets of San Francisco are neither a battlefield nor a war zone. So that there are a lot of opposition to this idea about killer robots, mm-hmm. but we'll see how it goes. I know a couple states like Virginia and Maine and North Dakota, they've actually banned the weaponization of robots, apparently San Francisco is going to try it out. So we'll see.
Yeah, that'll be pretty interesting to see how that plays out.
I'm saying they did bring up a case at the Dallas Police Department in 2016. They were trying to negotiate with this active shooter. And that wasn't working too well. So they just wired up this bomb disposal robot with some explosives. They drove it up to the suspect and detonated it, killing the shooter. So I think there is interest. I'll link the Ars Technica article down below. They do bring up a lot of interesting points and link to some other articles. But I do think it's kind of interesting that I could see some benefit, but I'm also like these people hugely suspicious. And like you said, if it is networked, like imagine if it has like its own LTE modem, it could be remotely hacked.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I will agree. Obviously, we've seen with like bomb bots and stuff like that, like diffusing stuff makes it way safer and easier. I'm not going to say there isn't any use cases for this, because I mean, like you brought up, the only person harmed, you know, in that negotiation or whatever was the shooter. So if that is true,
that's what the article says.
Yeah, I mean that would be a definite, you know, plus one in the category. But just the, I mean, anything programmed like that is always going to have faults and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's I would say very, very baby steps. Well, the next step would be what, facial recognition for all right, the person looks like this, so only shoot this person. I can see a lot of issues if it gets developed further. But if it's just like, you know,
are you trying to go down you saying robots are racist? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, we have talked about that in the past, and there have been several instances where algorithms were found to be biased based on race and religion preferences and stuff like that. So yes, robots absolutely can be racist due to their programming. But I mean, if you're just like, you know, slapping a GAD on a Wally, then maybe I could see that being useful.
Sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I'd want to see that in my neighborhood. I'd feel safer.
Yeah, he'd be picking up trash and he's like, you littered.
I mean, I'm sure littering would drop to an all-time low if that was the case. or he'd end up like what was that, travel bot or whatever that got destroyed in Philly?
Travel bot
or hitchhiker bot or whatever it was.
I'm not sure. You might have to bring me up to speed. I'm not aware.
Oh, I think we talked about it in the past. There was a hitchhiking robot. It was a super popular story like maybe a decade ago. And he traveled across, I think it was like Europe. It traveled like all over Europe, I believe. That's where it started. And basically they would just leave it at like rest stops and stuff like that. And it would say, hey, I'm like Hitchhiker Bot or whatever his name was. And you can take me with you to wherever you're going, and then just leave me in a safe place and someone else will pick me up. This little like tin can thing traveled like thousands of miles, and it got to Canada. And it traveled all throughout Canada, and then it got in the United States, and it immediately got beaten to death. I believe it was in Philly, and they just found it like on the side of the road, and it was just destroyed, just ripped apart.
They just office spaced it?
Basically, yes. They just bum rushed this little tin can robot and just ripped all his limbs off. So, yeah, that was I could also see that happening with these robots. But I know some college campuses are doing that as well. Like they have the little like trash can with wheels looking thing that's supposed to be like a safety bot or whatever. It has like a little emergency button on it that you can press for like to call the like campus security or police or whatever. I don't know if it was actually useful. I know they tested it at a few campuses. I haven't heard anything further, so I don't think it worked very well. But and the thing only moved like 2 miles per hour, so I don't know how that's going to get to you in time. But it is interesting.
Yeah, we live in a strange new world, you know. I do like that people in Philly have a healthy distrust of automation. I guess they are in the Rust Belt, you know. Maybe they're like, you took my job.
He's coming for my steel work job. Beat him up. Oh, man. That's got to be racist. All right. Well, I think that's it for today's episode. All right. Well, we'll catch you guys later. Bye.